Section B, Listening Comprehension. Section B consists of three tasks. At the beginning of each task, you'll hear this sound. Task 1. You are going to listen to four different extracts. For questions 1 to 10, choose the correct answer, A, B, or C. Circle the answer on the answer sheet provided. You will hear each extract twice. You now have 1 minute and 30 seconds to read the options. 0 is the example. Extract 1.
Calling all dog owners. University of Washington's Dog Aging Project would like to study your dog. Big dogs, small dogs, city dogs, country dogs, top dogs, hot dogs. They want to understand how dogs age. Their findings could help identify ways to keep our pets healthy longer. Daniel Promislow is a professor of pathology and biology at the University of Washington and part of the Dog Aging Project. Actually, you're probably not part of the project. You probably run it, right? You're not an aging dog. So he joined us from KUOW in Seattle. Thanks so much for being with us.
It's a pleasure to be here, and I'm one of many people who are running the Dog Aging Project.
What do you folks hope to learn?
We're trying to create the largest long-term study of aging in dogs that anyone has ever done, with the goal of trying to understand how genes and environment determine healthy aging in dogs.
So it's not just that old rule of thumb that 1 year is 7 years in a dog's life?
On average, that's true. One of the amazing things about dogs, though, is that there's tremendous variation. If you go to the dog park, you'll see large dogs and small dogs. They also vary tremendously in their lifespan. And we're trying to understand why they vary so much.
Big dogs, I'm told, live shorter lives than small dogs?
And that's unusual because if you compare different species of mammals, from elephants to mice, it's the large species that live longer. So dogs are doing things in reverse.
And no indication as to why that might be yet.
That's one of the things that we're hoping to find out.
Yeah. Calling all dog owners. University of Washington's Dog Aging Project would like to study your dog. Big dogs, small dogs, city dogs, country dogs, top dogs, hot dogs. They want to understand how dogs age. Their findings could help identify ways to keep our pets healthy longer. Daniel Promislow is a professor of pathology and biology at the University of Washington and part of the Dog Aging Project. Actually, you're probably not part of the project. You probably run it, right? You're not an aging dog. So he joined us from KUOW in Seattle. Thanks so much for being with us.
It's a pleasure to be here, and I'm one of many people who are running the Dog Aging Project.
What do you folks hope to learn?
We're trying to create the largest long-term study of aging in dogs that anyone has ever done, with the goal of trying to understand how genes and environment determine healthy aging in dogs.
So it's not just that old rule of thumb that 1 year is 7 years in a dog's life?
On average, that's true. One of the amazing things about dogs, though, is that there's tremendous variation. If you go to the dog park, you'll see large dogs and small dogs. They also vary tremendously in their lifespan. And we're trying to understand why they vary so much.
Big dogs, I'm told, live shorter lives than small dogs?
And that's unusual because if you compare different species of mammals, from elephants to mice, it's the large species that live longer. So dogs are doing things in reverse.
And no indication as to why that might be yet.
That's one of the things that we're hoping to find out.
Yeah.
Extract 2.
People think that redheads are an endangered species, but guess what? Welcome to Crosshaven, because we are not. We have redheads from all over the world and all over Ireland. We're here together celebrating. This is amazing. People are actually traveling from all over the world, from Vermont, from California, from Ohio. We've even had people traveling as far away as Dunedin in New Zealand. There's loads of Germans around, and we've also got a few visitors from the UK. So it's really, you know, it's become a global celebration of red hair, and I'm just so delighted to be able to welcome them to Crosshaven. We've been doing competitions all day today. There's actually photo booths. That's really nice as well, where people can come along and get their photograph taken too by some professional photographer. There's quite a serious message that's there as well. You hear so many stories of families and kids especially who've just been picked on, and it's really, really sad to see that, but that's what's really nice about this event is, you know, you're empowering like young kids to feel proud of who they are and their uniqueness. That's what I think is really special. So every year we crown a new king and queen to represent us gingers. And I'm kind of nervously waiting to see who gets this title, because it's a really big deal, because they're going to have to represent us for the whole year. I actually can't think of any other hair colour in the world where you'd find such a gathering or such a kind of a connection or a bond. So we've all kind of had like an association where people have referred to your hair, and I think that's the kind of common connection that we can all kind of talk to each other about. People think that redheads are an endangered species, but guess what? Welcome to Crosshaven, because we are not. We have redheads from all over the world and all over Ireland. We're here together celebrating. This is amazing. People are actually traveling from all over the world, from Vermont, from California, from Ohio. We've even had people traveling as far away as Dunedin in New Zealand. There's loads of Germans around, and we've also got a few visitors from the UK. So it's really, you know, it's become a global celebration of red hair, and I'm just so delighted to be able to welcome them to Crosshaven. We've been doing competitions all day today. There's actually photo booths. That's really nice as well, where people can come along and get their photograph taken too by some professional photographer. There's quite a serious message that's there as well. You hear so many stories of families and kids especially who've just been picked on, and it's really, really sad to see that, but that's what's really nice about this event is, you know, you're empowering like young kids to feel proud of who they are and their uniqueness. That's what I think is really special. So every year we crown a new king and queen to represent us gingers. And I'm kind of nervously waiting to see who gets this title, because it's a really big deal, because they're going to have to represent us for the whole year. I actually can't think of any other hair colour in the world where you'd find such a gathering or such a kind of a connection or a bond. So we've all kind of had like an association where people have referred to your hair, and I think that's the kind of common connection that we can all kind of talk to each other about.
Extract 3.
Let's talk about your first car. You were 17, and it was a Morris Minor. Do you remember the day you got that car?
Yes, I do. It was my 17th birthday, and it came with a bow around it. I mean, it was a second-hand car, and it was a little black Morris Minor. So I nicknamed it The Bomb, and I thought that that would be great to paint The Bomb on the back of it.
You've written about going to quite a posh boarding school.
Yeah.
And it being the sort of place where girls got new cars on their 17th birthday.
Yeah.
Was there a big distinction? Did people notice you didn't have a new car?
Yes, that's why I had to make it a fun car by painting The Bomb. on the back of it. It had to be a kind of character car. I mean, I was at boarding school because my dad was in the RAF, and the RAF pay for you to go to boarding school so that you have some kind of, you know, consistency in your education. But it means that as a forces kid, you're at boarding school with a lot of quite posh or wealthy kids. And I drove lots of other people because I'm not really, and still to this day, I'm not a big drinker. So I was always the good kind of taxi.
What sort of places? Where were you taking them?
I was taking them to places like the OPM Club, which was the old Plymouthian Manomedians Club, which was the, the kind of disco that was associated with my brother's school. And that's where we got to meet boys on a Saturday night.
Let's talk about your first car. You were 17, and it was a Morris Minor. Do you remember the day you got that car?
Yes, I do. It was my 17th birthday, and it came with a bow around it. I mean, it was a second-hand car, and it was a little black Morris Minor. So I nicknamed it The Bomb, and I thought that that would be great to paint The Bomb on the back of it.
You've written about going to quite a posh boarding school.
Yeah.
And it being the sort of place where girls got new cars on their 17th birthday.
Yeah.
Was there a big distinction? Did people notice you didn't have a new car?
Yes, that's why I had to make it a fun car by painting The Bomb on the back of it. It had to be a kind of character car. I mean, I was at boarding school because my dad was in the RAF. And the RAF pay for you to go to boarding school so that you have some kind of, you know, consistency in your education. But it means that as a forces kid, you're at boarding school with a lot of quite posh or wealthy kids. And I drove lots of other people because I'm not really, and still to this day, I'm not a big drinker. So I was always the good kind of taxi.
What sort of places? Where were you taking them?
I was taking them to places like the OPM Club, which was the old Plymouthian Manomedians Club, which was the, the kind of disco that was associated with my brother's school. And that's where we got to meet boys on a Saturday night.
Extract 4.
Well, it's a huge amount, and it's happening now. So my son's at school in central London, and most of the children in his school don't say the vowel I. They don't say like, they go lack, and back, and rad. And it's going. That is a diphthong that's going quite quickly. And at the moment, it sounds really irritating. But by the time he's an adult, that will probably be normal. And of course, that's where it happens. Change comes about in young people and how they use language. So all these linguistic things aren't separated out from other factors to do with youth and fashion. So that sometimes that's one of the things you're reacting to is actually that people younger than you are not using language the same way as you. And that's quite an emotional marker of your difference. You're not one of the people who are making the changes anymore. You're one of the people complaining about the changes. Well, it's a huge amount, and it's happening now. So my son's at school in central London, and most of the children in his school don't say the vowel I. They don't say like, they go lack, and back, and rad. And it's going. That is a diphthong that's going quite quickly. And at the moment, it sounds really irritating. But by the time he's an adult, that will probably be normal. And of course, that's where it happens. Change comes about in young people and how they use language. So all these linguistic things aren't separated out from other factors to do with youth and fashion. So that sometimes that's one of the things you're reacting to is actually that people younger than you are not using language the same way as you. And that's quite an emotional marker of your difference. You're not one of the people who are making the changes anymore. You're one of the people complaining about the changes.